greasy thumbprint, probably cinders, and one corner had a hairline fracture. Nevertheless, Cinder was confident it would still function. Aiko, a servant android who had belonged to Cinder's stepmother, had long been one of her closest friends. But, in a fit of anger and desperation, Audrey had dismantled Aiko and sold off her parts, leaving only the most useless pieces behind, including her personality chip. The third chip in Cinder's stash made her heart cramp as she picked it up. Peony's ID chip. Her younger stepsister had died almost 2 weeks ago. The plague had claimed her, because Cinder couldn't get the antidote to her in time. Because Cinder had been too late. What would Peony think now? That Cinder was Lunar? That Cinder was Princess Selene? That Cinder had danced with Kai? Kissed Kai?
Ew, is that an ID chip?
She jumped, enclosing the chip in her fist as Thorn sank into the second chair. Don't sneak up on me like that!
Why do you have an ID chip? He said, peering suspiciously at the two other chips on the arm of her chair. It'd better not be yours after you made me cut mine out.
She shook her head. It's my sister's. Gulping, she unfurled her fingers. A bit of dried blood had crackled off in her palm.
Don't tell me she's a runaway convict, too. Doesn't she need it?
Cinder held her breath, waiting for the aching in her chest to fade, and glared at Thorn. He met the look, and realization gradually expanded over his face.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She fidgeted with the chip, passing it from one metal knuckle to the next.
How long ago?
A couple of weeks. She tucked the chip into her fist. She was only 14.
The plague?
Cinder nodded. The androids who run the quarantines have been harvesting ID chips from the deceased. I think they're giving them to convicts and escaped Lunars, people wanting a new identity. She set the chip down beside the others. I couldn't let them take hers. Thorn settled back in his chair. He'd cleaned up well. His hair was neatly trimmed. He was clean-shaven, and he smelled of very expensive soap. He was sporting a well-worn leather jacket with a single medallion pinned onto the collar, the rank of captain.
"Aren't the androids that work at the quarantines government property?" he said, staring at Earth through the window.
"Yeah, I think so," Cinder frowned. She'd never given it any thought before, but saying it out loud brought on a flurry of suspicion. Thorn voiced the thought first.
Why would the government program androids to harvest ID chips?
Maybe it's not to sell on the black market, Cinder said, pressing Peony's chip into the arm of the chair. Maybe they just wipe them clean and recirculate them.
But she didn't believe that.
ID chips were cheap to make, and if the public ever found out their loved ones' identities were being erased, there would be an uproar. She bit her lip. Was there another reason, then? Something else the government was using the chips for? Or had someone managed to reprogram the quarantine androids without the government even knowing? Her gut tightened. How she wished she could talk to Kai.
What are those other two?
She glanced down. Direct communication chip, and a personality chip that used to belong to an android, a friend of mine.
Are you some sort of chip hoarder or something?
She scowled. I'm just keeping them safe until I figure out what to do with them. Eventually, I'll need to find a new body for Aiko, something she can... She trailed off, then gasped. That's it! She hurriedly stashed the other two chips in her calf again. Grabbing Aiko's personality chip, she sped off to the cargo bay. Thorn followed her, into the hall, down the hatch to the sublevel, into the engine room, lingering in the doorway while Cinder crawled beneath the ductwork and propped up beside the computer mainframe. We need a new auto control system, she said, opening a panel and running her finger along the labels. Aiko is an auto control system. All androids are. Of course, she's used to the functionality of a much smaller body, but...
How different can it be?
I'm going to guess really different.
She shook her head and plugged the chip into the system's mainframe. No, this is going to work. It just needs an adapter. She worked while she talked, twisting live wires out of their connections, rearranging, reconnecting.
And we have an adapter?
We're about to. Turning, she scanned the control panel behind her. We're never going to use the dust vacuum module, are we?
The dust what?
She yanked a connector cord from the panel and snapped one end into the mainframe, the other into the inlet for the auto control system, the same that had nearly fried her own circuitry. And that should do it, she said, sitting back on her heels. The system lit up, the sound of an internal diagnostics check familiar to Cinder's ear. Her heart was palpitating. To think that she wouldn't be alone anymore, that she could succeed in rescuing at least one person who mattered to her. The mainframe fell quiet again. Thorn stared up at the ship's ceiling as if he expected it to cave in on him. Iko? Cinder said, facing the computer.
Were the speakers on?
The sound and data input settings correct? She'd been able to communicate with Thorn just fine when they were in the warehouse, but...
Cinder?
Her relieved gasp nearly knocked her backward.
Iko, yes, it's me, it's Cinder!
She grabbed hold of a cooling tube that hung overhead, a part of the engine, a part of the ship. And Iko was all of it.
Cinder, something's wrong with my vision sensor. I can't see you, and I feel funny.
Tongue jutting from her mouth, Cinder bent over to analyze the slot where Iko's personality chip had found a new home. It seemed to fit perfectly, protected and functional. There was no hint of any compatibility issues. Her smile split from ear to ear.
I know, Iko, things are going to be a little different for a while. I've had to install you as the auto control system of a spaceship, a 214 Rampian Class 11.3. Do you have net connectivity? You should be able to download the specs. A Rampian? A spaceship?
Cinder ducked. Though there were only one speaker in the engine room, Iko's voice echoed from every corner.
What are we doing on a spaceship?
It's a long, long story, but it's all I could think of to do with your...
Oh, Cinder! Cinder!
Iko's voice came out as a wail, sending a chill down Cinder's spine.
Where were you all day? Audrey is furious and Peony... Peony!
Cinder's words dried up.
She's dead, Cinder. Audrey received a comm from the quarantines.
Cinder stared dumbly at the wall. I know, Iko. That was 2 weeks ago. It's been 2 weeks since Audrey disabled you. This is the first body I've been able to find. Iko fell silent. Cinder glanced around, sensing Iko all around her. The engine rotated faster for a moment, then reduced to normal speed. The temperature barely dropped. A light flickered in the hallway behind Thorn, who was stiff and uncomfortable in the doorway, looking like a poltergeist had just taken over his beloved Rampian.
Cinder,
Iko said after a few silent minutes of exploration.
I'm enormous!
There was a distinct whine in her metallic tone.
You're a ship, Iko?
But I'm... How can I... No hands? No visual sensor? Humongous landing gear? Are those supposed to be my feet?
Well, no, it's supposed to be landing gear.
Oh, what's to become of me? I'm hideous!
Iko, it's only temper... Now hold on just 1 minute there, little miss disembodied voice.
Thorn strode into the engine room and crossed his arms over his chest.
What do you mean, hideous?
This time, the temperature spiked.
Who's that? Who's speaking?
I am Captain Carswell Thorn, the owner of this fine ship, and I will not stand to have her insulted in my presence.
Cinder rolled her eyes.
Captain Carswell Thorn?
That's right.
A brief silence.
My net search is finding only a cadet Carswell Thorn of the American Republic imprisoned in New Beijing prison on...
That's him, said Cinder, ignoring Thorn's glare.
Another silence as the heat in the engine room hovered just upside of comfortable. Then,
"You're rather handsome, Captain Thorne."
Cinder groaned. "And you, my fine lady, are the most gorgeous ship in these skies, and don't let anyone ever tell you different."
The temperature drifted upward until Cinder dropped her arms with a sigh.
"Iko, are you intentionally blushing?"
The temperature dropped back down to pleasant.
"No," Iko said.
Then,
"But am I really pretty, even as a ship?"
"The prettiest," said Thorne.
"You do have a naked lady painted on your port side," added Cinder.
"Painted her myself."
A series of inset ceiling lights flickered and released a dim glow.
"And really, Iko, this is only temporary. We'll get a new auto control system and we'll get you a new body. Eventually. But I need you to watch over the ship, check the reports, maybe run a diagnostics."
"The power cell is almost dead."
Cinder nodded. "Right, I knew that part already. Anything else?" The engine hummed all around her.
"I guess I could run a full system check."
Beaming, Cinder crawled toward the door, meeting a pleased-looking Thorne when she stood back up.
"Thank you, Iko."
The lights flickered out again as Iko diverted her energy.
"But why are we on this spaceship again? And with a convicted felon? No offense, Captain Thorne."
Cinder grimaced, too exhausted to tell the story, but knowing she couldn't keep it from her companions forever.
"All right," she said, sidling past Thorne and into the hallway.
"Let's go back to the cockpit. We might as well be comfortable."
Chapter 16. Scarlet called a hover to take them into Toulouse, nearly draining her account of Gilles' latest deposit. She sat opposite Wolf during the ride, her pistol digging into her back as she watched him. In such close quarters, she knew the pistol was all but useless to her. After all, she'd witnessed Wolf's speed more than once. He could have her pinned and half-choked before she loosened the gun from her waistband. But it was impossible to feel threatened by the semi-stranger across from her. Wolf was entranced by the rolling farmlands passing by, gaping at tractors and cattle and decrepit, crumbling barns. His legs jogged ceaselessly the whole time, though she doubted he realized it. The almost childlike fascination was at odds with him in every way. The fading black eye, the pale scars, the broad shoulders, the calm composure he'd had as he nearly strangled Roland, the fierce brutality in his gaze as he nearly killed his opponent in the fight. Scarlet chewed the inside of her cheek, wondering which side of him was an act and which was real.
"Where are you from?" she asked.
Wolf swung his gaze around to meet her, the curiosity vanishing, like he'd forgotten she was there.
"Here, France."
Her lips twitched.
"Interesting. You look like you've never seen a cow before."
"Oh, no, not here, not Rieux. I'm from the city."
"Paris?"
He nodded, and his ticking legs switched to a new rhythm, alternating in time with each other. Unable to take it, Scarlet reached over and firmly pressed her palm onto one knee, forcing his bouncing leg to still. Wolf skittered at the touch.
"You're driving me crazy," she said, pulling back.
His legs stayed still, for the time at least, but his surprise lingered on her.
"So, how did you end up in Rieux, of all places?"
His attention swept back to the window.
"At first I just wanted to get away. I took a maglev to Lyon and started following the fights from there. Rieux is small, but it draws a good crowd."
"I noticed." Scarlet leaned her head back against the seat. "I lived in Paris for a while when I was a kid. Before I came down here to live with Grand-Mère," she shrugged.
"I've never really missed it." They passed through the farms and olive groves, the vineyards and suburbs, and were swooping into the heart of Toulouse when she heard Wolf respond.
"I haven't missed it either."
The sub-level of the maglev station was obnoxiously bright as they descended on the escalator, the fluorescence overcompensating for the lack of sun. Two androids and a weapons detector were waiting at the bottom. and one beeped the second Scarlet's feet touched the platform. Leo, 1272, TCP, 380, personal, handgun, detected. Please extend your ID chip and stand by for clearance.
I have a permit, Scarlet said, holding out her wrist.
A flash of red. Weapon cleared. Thank you for riding the European Federation maglev train, said the android, rolling back to its post. Scarlet brushed past the androids and found an empty bench just off the rails. Despite half a dozen small, spherical cameras orbiting near the ceiling, the walls were scribbled with years of elaborate graffiti and the ghost images of torn concert posters. Wolf claimed the seat beside her, and within moments, his frenetic energy had started up again. Though he'd left space in between them, Scarlet found herself attuned to the fidgeting fingers, jogging knees, shoulders rolling out their kinks. His energy was almost tangible. Scarlet was exhausted just from watching him. Trying to ignore him, she dug her port screen from her pocket and checked her comms, though nothing but junk and ads had come in. Three trains came and went: Lisbon, Rome, West Munich. Scarlet grew anxious and didn't realize that her own foot had started tapping to the same beat until Wolf placed the pad of a finger against her knee. She froze, and Wolf instantly pulled away.
Sorry,
he whispered, gripping his hands together in his lap. Scarlet had no response, unsure what he was apologizing for. Unable to tell if his ears had just gone pink or if it was just the flickering lights from a nearby ad. She saw him let out a measured breath before, without warning. Wolf stiffened and whipped his head toward the escalators. Instantly on edge, Scarlet craned her neck to see what had startled him. A man in a business suit was passing through the detectors at the base of the escalator. He was followed by another man in torn jeans and a sweater. Then, a mother guiding a hovering carriage with one hand while checking her port with the other.
"What's wrong?" she asked,
but the words were drowned out by the blaring speakers announcing the train to Paris via Montpellier. The strain in Wolf's muscles fell away, and he bounded to his feet, the track's magnets starting to hum, and he went to join the other passengers rustling toward the platform's edge. The unease had already vanished from his face. Scarlet hefted her bag onto her shoulder and glanced back once more before joining him. The train's bullet nose glided past, a blur at first before coming to an easy stop. In one fluid movement, the cars lowered themselves onto the track with a clang, and the doors all down the train hissed open. Androids deboarded from each car, their monotone voices speaking in unison.
Welcome aboard the European Federation maglev train. Please extend your ID for ticket scanning. Welcome aboard the European...
A weight released from Scarlet's chest as the scanner passed over her wrist and she stepped onto the train. Finally, she was on her way. No more standing still. No more doing nothing. She found an empty privacy room with bunk beds and a desk and a net screen on the wall. The car had the musty smell of room sprayed with too much air freshener.
"It's going to be a long trip," she said, depositing her bag on the desk. "We can watch the net for a while. Do you have a favorite feed?"
Standing just inside the room, Wolf looked from the floor to the screen to the walls, trying to find new places to land his eyes, anywhere but on her.
"Not really," he said, crossing to the window.
Scarlet perched on the edge of the bed, able to make out the flicker of net screens on the glass, highlighting a collection of fingerprint smudges.
"Me either. Who has time to watch it, right?"
When he didn't respond, she leaned back on her palms and pretended not to notice the sudden awkwardness.
"Screen on."
A panel of gossip reporters were seated around a desk. Their empty, catty words flew in and out of Scarlet's ears, her thoughts too distracted before she realized they were critiquing the lunar girl at the New Beijing ball, her atrocious hair, the embarrassing state of her gown, and were those grease stains on her gloves? Tragic. One of the women cackled.
"Too bad they don't have any department stores in space, because that girl could use a serious makeover."
The other hosts tittered.
Scarlet shook her head. That poor girl is going to be executed, and everyone's just making jokes about her.
Wolf glanced back at the screen. That's the second time I've heard you defend her.
Yeah, well, I try to think for myself once in a while, rather than buy into the ridiculous propaganda the media would have us believe.
She frowned, realizing that she sounded exactly like her grandmother. She tempered her annoyance with a sigh.
People are just so quick to accuse and criticize. But they don't know what she's been through, or what led her to do the things she did. Do we even know for sure that she did anything?
An automated voice warned that the train doors were closing, and she heard them whistle shut seconds later. The train rose off the tracks and slithered out of the station, plunging them into a darkness only broken by the corridor lights and the blue net screen. It picked up speed, a bullet coasting down the tracks, and broke ground all at once, sunlight spilling through the windows.
Shots were fired at the ball, said Wolf, as the talking heads on the screen jabbered on. Some believe the girl meant to start a massacre, and that it's a miracle no one was hurt.
Some people have also said she was there to assassinate Queen Lavanna, and wouldn't that have made her a hero?
Scarlet mindlessly flipped through the channels. I just think we shouldn't judge her or anyone without trying to understand them first. That maybe we should get the full story before jumping to conclusions. Crazy notion, I know.
She huffed, irritated to find heat rushing up to her cheeks. The channels ticked by. Ads, news, celebrity gossip, a reality show about a group of children attempting to run their own small country. More ads.
Besides, she muttered half to herself, the girl is only 16. It seems to me that everyone is overreacting.
Scratching behind his ear, Wolf sank onto the bed, as far from Scarlet as possible.
There have been cases of lunars as young as 7 years old being found guilty of murder.
She scowled.
As far as I know, that girl hasn't murdered anybody.
I didn't murder Hunter last night, but that doesn't make me harmless.
Scarlet hesitated. No, I guess it doesn't. After a heavy silence, she changed the net screen back to the reality show and feigned interest in it.
I started fighting when I was 12.
She slid her attention back to him. Wolf was staring at the wall, at nothing.
For money?
No, for status. I'd only been in the pack for a few weeks. But it became clear very fast that if you don't fight, if you can't defend yourself, then you're nothing. You're tormented and ridiculed. You practically become a servant, and there's nothing you can do about it. The only way to prevent becoming an Omega is to fight and to win. That's why I do it. That's why I'm good at it.
Her brow had knit together so tight it was beginning to ache, but Scarlet couldn't relax as she listened.
Omega, she said, just like a real wolf pack.
He nodded, picking nervously at his blunt fingernails. I saw how afraid of me you were. Not even just afraid, but revolted. And you were right to be. But you said that you like to have the full story before judging, to try to understand first. So, that's my story. That's how I learned to fight, without mercy.
But you're not in the gang anymore. You don't have to fight anymore.
What else would I do? He said with a humorless laugh. It's all I know, all I'm good at. Until yesterday, I didn't even know what a tomato was.
Scarlet smothered the start of a grin. His frustration was almost endearing.
And now you do, she said. Who knows? Tomorrow you might learn about broccoli. By next week, you could know the difference between summer squash and zucchini.
Wolf glared at her.
I mean it. You're not a dog who can't be taught new tricks. You can learn to be good at something other than fighting. We'll find something else you can do.
Wolf ruffled his hair with a fist, making it even messier than usual.
That isn't why I'm telling you this, he said, his tone calmer now, but still discouraged. It won't matter even once we get to Paris, but it seemed important for you to know that I don't enjoy it. I hate losing control like that. I've always hated it.
The fight flashed through Scarlet's memories. How Wolf had released the other fighter so quickly.
how he'd hurled himself off the stage as if trying to outrun himself. She gulped.
Were you ever the Omega?
A flash of insult passed over his face.
Of course not.
Scarlet quirked an eyebrow, and Wolf seemed to recognize the arrogance in his tone a moment too late. Evidently, the craving for status hadn't left him yet.
No, he said softer now. I made sure that I was never the Omega.
Standing, he marched again to the window and peered out at rolling vineyard hills. Scarlet pursed her lips, feeling something akin to guilt. It was easy to forget the risk Wolf was taking when all she could think of was getting her grandma back. Sure, Wolf may have gotten out of the gang, but now he was going right back to them.
Thank you for agreeing to help me, she said after a long silence. No one else was exactly lining up to help.
He shrugged stiffly, and when it was clear he wasn't going to respond, Scarlet sighed and started clicking the channels again. She stopped on a news feed. Search continues for escaped lunar fugitive Lynn Cinder. She jerked upward.
Escaped?
Wolf turned and read the ticker before frowning at her.
You hadn't heard?
No, when?
A day or two ago.
Scarlet cupped her chin, entranced by the unfolding news.
I had no idea. How is that possible?
The screen started to replay the footage from the ball.
They say someone helped her, a government employee.
Wolf pressed a hand against the windowsill.
It makes me wonder what they would do in such a situation. If a lunar needed help and you had the ability to help them, even though it would put you and your family at risk, would you do it?
Scarlet frowned, barely listening.
I wouldn't risk my family for anyone.
Wolf dropped his gaze to the cheap carpet.
Your family or your grandmother?
Rage came to her like a spigot turned to full, remembering her father, how he'd come to her farm wearing that transmitter, how he'd torn her hangar apart.
Grandmère's the only family I have left,
rubbing her clammy palms on her pants. Scarlet stood.
I could use an espresso.
She hesitated, not sure what she wanted his response to be when she asked,
Do you want to come to the dining car with me?
His gaze slipped past her shoulder to the door, looking torn. Scarlet met his indecision with a smile, both teasing and friendly, perhaps a little flirtatious.
It has been almost a full 2 hours since you ate.
You must be famished.
Something flickered across Wolf's face, something bordering on panic.
No, thank you, he said quickly. I'll stay here.
Oh.
The brief rush of her pulse slipped away.
All right, I'll be back soon.
As she was shutting the door behind her, she saw Wolf push his hand roughly through his hair with a relieved sigh, like he'd narrowly avoided a trap. Chapter 17. The train's corridor was buzzing with activity. Making her way to the dining car, Scarlet passed servant androids delivering boxed lunches, a woman in a stiff business suit talking sternly at her port, a waddling toddler curiously opening every door he passed. Scarlet dodged them all, through half a dozen identical cars, past the myriad passengers who were on their way to normal jobs, normal vacations, normal shopping trips, perhaps even going back to normal homes. Her emotions gradually started to fall away from her. Her irritation with the media for demonizing a 16-year-old girl, only to discover that girl had escaped from prison and was still on the loose. Her sympathy for Wolf's violent childhood, followed by the unexpected rejection when he chose not to come with her. The fluctuating terror over her grandmother and what could be happening to her now, while the train careened too slowly through the countryside, tempered only by the knowledge that at least she was on her way. At least she was getting closer. Her mind still spinning like a kaleidoscope, she was glad to find the dining car relatively empty. A bored-looking bartender stood inside a circular bar, watching a net-screen talk show that Scarlet had never liked. Two women were drinking mimosas at a small table. A young man was sitting with his legs up in a booth. tapping furiously on his port. Four androids loitered beside the wall, waiting to make deliveries out to the private cars. Scarlett sat down at the bar, setting her port beside a glass of green olives.
"What will you have?" asked the bartender, still focused on the interview between the host and a washed-up action star.
"Espresso, one sugar, please." She settled her chin on her palm as he punched her order into the dispenser. Sliding her finger across the port screen, she typed, "The Order of the Pack." A listing of music bands and net groups spilled down the page, all calling themselves wolf packs and secret societies. "Loyal Soldier to the Order of the Pack." 0 hits. "The Wolves." She knew as soon as she'd entered it that the term was far too broad. She quickly amended it to "The Wolves Gang." Then, when 20,400 hits blinked back up at her, she added, "Paris." One music band who had toured in Paris 2 summers ago. "Wolf Street Gang. Wolf Vigilantes. Sadistic kidnappers parading as righteous lupine wannabes." Nothing, nothing, nothing. Frustrated, she tucked her hair into her hood. Her espresso had appeared in front of her without her notice, and she brought the small cup to her mouth, blowing away the steam before taking a sip. Surely, if this Order of the Pack had been around long enough to recruit 962 members, there must be some record of them. Crimes, trials, murders, general mayhem against society. She strained to think of another search term, wishing she would have questioned Wolf more.
"That's quite a specific search."
She swiveled her head toward the man seated 2 stools away, who she hadn't heard sit down. He was giving her a teasing, droopy-eyed smile that hinted at a dimple in one cheek. He struck her as vaguely familiar, which startled her until she realized she'd only seen him an hour ago on the station's platform at Toulouse. "I'm looking for something very specific," she said.
"I should say, righteous lupine wannabes? I can't even begin to imagine what that entails."
The bartender frowned at them.
"What'll you have?"
The stranger swiveled his gaze.
"Chocolate milk, please."
Scarlett chuckled as the bartender, unimpressed, took down an empty glass.
"Would not have been my first guess."
"No. What would you have guessed?"
She scrutinized him. He couldn't have been much older than she was, and, though not classically handsome, with that much confidence, he undoubtedly had never had much trouble with women. His build was stocky but muscular, his hair combed neatly back. There was a keenness in the way he carried himself, a certainty that bordered on arrogance.
"Cognac," she said. "It was always my father's favorite."
"I'm afraid I've never tried it."
The dimple deepened as a tall glass of frothing chocolate milk was set in front of him. Scarlett clicked off her port and picked up her espresso. The scent seemed suddenly too strong, too bitter.
"That actually looks pretty good."
"Surprisingly high in protein," he said, taking a drink. Scarlett took another sip from her cup and found that her taste buds disapproved. She set it back down on the saucer.
"If you were a gentleman, you would offer to buy me one as well."
"If you were a lady, you would have waited for me to make the offer."
Scarlett smirked, but the man was already beckoning to the bartender and ordering a second chocolate milk.
"I'm Ran, by the way."
"Scarlett."
"Like your hair?"
"Oh, wow, I'd never heard that one before."
The bartender set the new drink on the bar, then turned away and upped the volume on the screen.
"And where are you traveling to, Mademoiselle Scarlett?"
"Paris."
The word clunked into her head, filling up her thoughts with its weight. Her attention danced to the net screen on the wall, checking the time, calculating their distance, their arrival.
"Paris."
She took a long drink. It wasn't fresh like the milk she was used to, but the thick sweetness was a rare treat.
"I'm going to visit my grandmother."
"That's so. I'm heading to Paris, too."
Scarlett nodded vaguely, suddenly wanting the conversation to be over.
Sipping at the thick beverage, it occurred to her that she'd gotten it through manipulation, subconscious as it may have been. She wasn't interested in this man, had no curiosity about why he was going to Paris or if she would ever see him again after this moment. She had only needed to prove that she could garner his interest, and now she was annoyed that she'd captured it so easily. It was just like something her father would do, and that realization turned her stomach, made her want to shove the chocolate milk away.
"Are you traveling alone?"
She tilted her head toward him and smiled apologetically.
"No, in fact, I should be getting back to him."
She emphasized him more than was necessary, but he didn't flinch.
"Of course," he said.
They finished their drinks at the same time, and Scarlett swished her wrist over the scanner on the bar before the stranger could object, paying for her own.
"Bartender," she said, sliding off the stool, "do you have orders to go, some sandwiches or anything?"
The bartender jerked his thumb at the screen's inset into the bar.
"Menus."
Scarlett frowned.
"Never mind, I'll order something back at the room."
The bartender showed no sign of having heard her.
"It was nice to meet you, Ran."
He propped an elbow on the counter, twisting his stool toward her.
"Perhaps our paths will cross again. In Paris."
Hair prickled on her neck as he settled his chin onto his palm. She noticed with a jolt of disgust that each of his fingernails had been filed into a sharp, perfect point.
"Perhaps," she said, her tone suffused with politeness.
The instinctual alarm hung with her for two whole cars as she made her way back through the train, a warning buzzing in the air. She tried to shake it off. This was her own nerves playing tricks on her, paranoia finally catching up to her after what had happened to her grandmother and her father. It was amazing she could carry on a conversation at all with all the panic that was residing just beneath the surface of her skin. He'd been polite. He'd been a gentleman. Maybe talon-like nails were a growing trend in the city. Just as she'd determined that nothing about Ran had been deserving of the sudden, ardent distrust, she remembered. She had seen him on the platform in Toulouse, stepping off the escalator in his ratty jeans and no luggage, when Wolf had become so on edge. When it seemed like Wolf had heard something, or recognized someone. A coincidence? The speaker overhead crackled. Scarlett barely heard it over the noise of the corridor, until the repeated words gradually silenced the chatter around her. "Experiencing a temporary delay, all passengers are to return to their private quarters immediately and stay clear of the corridors until further notice is given. This is not a test. We are experiencing a temporary delay." Chapter 18. Scarlett shut the door behind her, relieved that Wolf was still there, pacing. He swiveled toward her.
"I just heard the announcement," she said. "Do you know what's going on?"
"No, I was wondering if you might."
She wrapped her fingers around the port screen in her pocket. "Some sort of delay. It seems odd to clear the corridors, though."
He didn't respond. His scowl became fierce, almost angry.
"You smell."
When he didn't continue, an offended laugh erupted out of her.
"I smell?"
Wolf roughly shook his head, hair whipping across his creased brow.
"Not like that. Who did you talk to out there?"
Frowning, she fell back against the door. If Ran had been wearing cologne, it had been too faint for her to pick up.
"Why?"
she snapped, annoyed as much with his accusation as with the unexpected sting of guilt it caused.
"Is it any of your business?"
His jaw tensed.
"No, that's not what I..."
He paused, eyes flickering past her. A knock startled Scarlett away from the wall. She turned and yanked open the door. An android rolled into the room, scanner at the end of its wiry arm.
"We are performing an identity check for the safety of all passengers. Please show your ID for scanning."
Scarlett raised her hand on instinct. She didn't think to question the order until a red light passed over her skin, beeped, and the android turned to Wolf.
"What's going on?" she said. "We scanned our tickets when we boarded."
Another beep. "You are not to leave this room until further instructions are given."
"That wasn't an answer," said Scarlet.
A panel opened in the android's torso, and a third limb reached out to greet them. This one fitted with a slender syringe.
"I must now conduct a mandatory blood check. Please extend your right arm."
Scarlet gawked down at the gleaming needle.
"You're running blood tests? That's ridiculous. We're just going to Paris."
"Please extend your right arm," the android repeated, "or I will be forced to report you for failure to comply with maglev rail safety regulations. Your tickets will be considered invalid and you will be escorted off the train at the next station."
Scarlet bristled and glanced at Wolf, but he had eyes only for the syringe. For a moment, Scarlet thought he was going to smash in the robot's sensor before he reluctantly stretched out his arm. Wolf's expression became distant while the needle punctured his skin. The moment the android had withdrawn a blood sample and retracted the skeletal limb, Wolf backed away and folded his arm against his chest. "A fear of needles?" Scarlet squinted at him, holding out her own elbow as the android produced another syringe. She couldn't imagine it hurt any more than that tattoo had. Scowling, she watched as the syringe filled with her own blood.
"What exactly are you looking for?" she said as the android finished
and both syringes disappeared into its body.
"Initiating blood scan," said the android, followed by a clatter of humming and beeps.
Wolf had just tucked his arm against his side when the android pronounced,
"Scan complete. Please shut the door and remain in this room until further instructions are given."
"You already said that," Scarlet said to the android's back as it retreated into the hall.
Pressing a thumb against the small puncture wound, Scarlet slammed the door shut with her foot.
"What was that all about? I have half a mind to calm the maglev customer service and issue a complaint."
Turning, she found Wolf already at the window. His steps had been soundless.
"We're slowing down."
It was a silent, agonizing moment before Scarlet felt it too. Through the window, she could see a thick canopy of forest choking off the midday sun. There were no roads, no buildings. They weren't stopping at a station. She opened her mouth, but Wolf's expression stopped her question before it could form.
"Do you hear that?"
Scarlet tugged the zipper of her hoodie down to let air on her neck and listened. The hum of magnets. The whistle of air passing through an open window in the next cabin. The rattle of luggage.
Wailing. So distant, it sounded like a fading nightmare.
Cold goosebumps grazed her arms.
"What's going on out there?"
The wall speaker clattered.
"Passengers, this is your conductor speaking. There has been a medical emergency aboard the train. We will be experiencing a delay while we wait for medical authorities. We ask that all passengers remain in their private quarters and comply with any requests from the staff androids. Thank you for your patience."
The speaker fell silent, leaving Scarlet and Wolf staring at each other. Scarlet's throat constricted. A blood test? Crying. A delay.
"The plague,"
Wolf said nothing.
"They'll put the whole train on lockdown," she said. "We'll all be quarantined."
Out in the hall, doors were slamming, neighbors yelling questions and speculations at each other, ignoring the conductor's request to stay in their own rooms. The android must have moved on to the next car. Scarlet heard the rushed words, "Letemosis outbreak," posed as a question. A fear.
"No,"
she spat the word like a bullet.
"They can't keep us here. My grandma."
Her voice hitched, a tide of panic overwhelming her. Someone down the hall pounded erratically on a door. The distant wailing grew louder.
"Get your things," said Wolf.
She and Wolf moved at the same time. She threw her port screen into her pack while Wolf crossed the window and flung it open. The ground raced beneath them.
Beyond the tracks, a dense forest stretched out, dissolving into shadows. Scarlet checked the pistol in her waistband.
Are we jumping?
Yes, but they might be expecting it, so we have to do it before the train slows too much. They're probably prepping enforcement androids right now to round up runaways.
Scarlet nodded. If it is Letimosis, we've probably already become a quarantine.
Wolf thrust his head out the window, looking both ways down the length of the train.
Now's our best chance.
Pulling inside, he heaved the bag onto one shoulder. Scarlet peered down at the ground, fleeing beneath them, dizzied by a moment of vertigo. It was impossible to focus on any one spot as the speckled sun flashed against the trees.
Well, this seems dangerous.
We'll be fine.
She peered up at him, for a moment expecting to meet that crazed madman again. But his expression was stone cold and clinical. He was focused hard on the landscape that whizzed by them.
They're breaking, he said. We'll start slowing down faster now.
Again, it was a few seconds before Scarlet sensed it too, the subtle shift in speed, the way they were decelerating fast, no longer just coasting to a steady stop. Wolf inclined his head.
Climb onto my back.
I can jump myself.
Scarlet!
She met his eyes. His youthful curiosity from before was gone, replaced with a sternness she hadn't expected.
What? It'll be just like jumping off the barn into a haystack. I've done that 100 times.
A haystack? Honestly, Scarlet, it'll be nothing like that.
Before she could argue, before she could cement her defiance, he bent over her and scooped her into both arms. She gasped and had just enough time to open her mouth, ready to demand he put her down, before Wolf was on the windowsill, the wind whipping Scarlet's curls against her neck. He jumped. Scarlet yelped and grabbed onto him, her stomach somersaulting, and then the shock of landing jogged up her spine. She dug her fingers into his shoulders. Every limb trembled. Wolf had landed in a clearing 8 steps beyond the tracks. He staggered into the tree line and hunkered into the shadows.
All right? He asked.
Just like, she caught her breath,
a haystack.
A laugh reverberated through his chest into her, and before she was ready, Wolf settled her feet onto a patch of squishy moss. She scrambled out of his hold, caught her balance, then punched him squarely in the arm.
Never do that again!
He looked almost pleased with himself before he tilted his head toward the forest.
We should move farther in case someone saw us.
She listened to the train zipping by, her pulse heavy and erratic, and followed Wolf into the trees. They hadn't gone 12 steps when the thrumming of the train disappeared, fading away down the tracks. Scarlet dug her port out of the bag on Wolf's shoulder and checked their location.
Great. The nearest town is 20 miles east of here. It's out of our way, but maybe someone can give us a ride to the next maglev station.
Because we seem so trustworthy?
Scarlet peered up at him, noting the pale, scattered scars and the faded black eye.
What's your idea?
We should stay on the tracks. Another train will be by eventually.
And they'll give us a lift?
Sure.
This time, she was sure she caught mischief in his eye as he started back down the rails, but they hadn't gone 12 steps when he halted mid-step.
What?
Wolf spun on her, clamping one hand behind her head, the other firmly over her mouth. Tensing, Scarlet moved to shove him away, but something gave her pause. He was staring off into the forest, brow furrowed. Tilting his nose up, he sniffed the air. When he was sure she wouldn't make a sound, he snatched his hands away as if something had stung him. Scarlet stumbled back, surprised by the sudden release. They lingered, still and silent, Scarlet straining to listen for what had Wolf on edge. Slowly reaching behind her, she pulled the gun from her waistband. The click as she released the safety echoed off the trees. Off in the woods, a wolf howled. The lonely cry sent a shiver down Scarlet's spine. Wolf didn't seem surprised. Then, behind them, another howl.
This one farther away. Then another to the north. Silence crept around them as the howls faded longingly into the air.
"Friends of yours?" Scarlet asked.
Clarity returned to Wolf's expression, and he glanced at her, then down at the gun. It struck her as odd that he could be startled by it, when the howls had garnered no reaction at all.
"They won't bother us," he said finally, turning and heading down the tracks.
With a snort, Scarlet trotted after him.
"Well, isn't that a relief? We're stranded in wild wolf territory, but as long as you say they're not going to bother us..."
She clicked the gun's safety back on and was tucking it back in her waistband when Wolf's gesture gave her pause.
"They won't bother us," he said, almost smiling. "But you might want to keep that out anyway, just in case."
Chapter 19.
"What is all this junk?"
Cinder locked her jaw, straining to push a plastic crate that was almost as tall as she was.
Thorn grunted beside her.
"It's not junk."
The tendons in his neck bulged as the crate collided with the cargo bay wall. Thorn tossed his arms over the top with a groan, and Cinder collapsed against it. Her shoulders ached, as tense as the metal that made up her left leg, but her arms felt like they were about to fall off. But when she allowed herself to look around the cargo bay, a sense of accomplishment settled around her. All the crates had been slid to the walls, clearing an actual path from the cockpit to the living quarters. The smaller, lighter ones had been stacked on top of one another, and some were left out as makeshift furniture in front of the main net screen. It bordered on cozy. The next job would be to actually unpack the crates, the ones that were worth unpacking. But that would be a job for another day.
"No, really," she said when she'd found her breath. "What is all this?"
Thorn slid down beside her and wiped his brow with his sleeve.
"I don't know," he said, eyeing the stamped labels on the side of the nearest crate, an unhelpful code. "Supplies, food. I think there are some guns in one of them. And I know I had a few sculptures from this really collectible second-era artist. I was going to make a fortune off of them. But I got arrested before I had a chance," he sighed.
Cinder squinted at him. Sure that the sculptures were stolen, she found it difficult to muster any sympathy.
"Shame," she muttered, thumping her head back against the crate.
Thorn pointed at something on the far wall, his forearm jetting beneath Cinder's nose.
"What's that?"
She followed his gesture, frowned, and with a cranky moan, pushed herself back to her feet. The corner of a metal frame could be seen behind a tall stack of crates they'd left against the wall.
"A door?"
She drew up the ship's blueprint on her retina display.
"The med bay?"
Realization brightened Thorn's face.
"Oh, right! This ship does have one of those!"
Cinder settled her fists on her hips.
"You covered up the med bay?"
Thorn pulled himself up.
"Never needed it."
"Don't you think it might be good to have access to, just in case?"
Thorn shrugged.
"We'll see."
Rolling her eyes, Cinder reached for the uppermost crate and hauled it down onto the floor, already disrupting their hard-won pathway.
"How can we be sure there's nothing in these boxes that can be tracked?"
"What do you think, I'm an amateur?"
"Nothing entered this ship without being thoroughly inspected. Otherwise, the Republic would have reclaimed it all a long time ago rather than let it idle in that warehouse."
"There may not be any trackers," said Iko, making Cinder and Thorn both jump.
They still weren't used to their invisible, omnipresent companion.
"But we can still be detected on radar. I'm doing my best to keep us out of the path of any satellites or ships, but it's surprisingly crowded up here."
Thorn unrolled his sleeves.
"And it's next to impossible to re-enter Earth's atmosphere without detection. That's how they nabbed me last time."
"I thought there was a trick to it," said Cinder. "I'm sure I heard once about a way people could sneak into Earth's atmosphere without notice. Where did I hear that?"
"News to me.
I got pretty good at sweet-talking my way into public hangars, but I don't think that's gonna work with such a high-profile convict on the loose.
Having found an old rubber band in the galley, Cinder fished it from her pocket and tossed her hair up in a ponytail. Her brain ticked through her memories unit, until, with a snap, it came to her. Dr. Erland had told her that there were more Lunars on Earth than people suspected, and that they had a way of getting to Earth without the government taking notice.
Lunars know how to cloak their spacecrafts.
Huh?
She pulled herself from the daze, blinking at Thorne.
Lunars can cloak their spacecrafts, keep Earth and radars from picking up on them. That's how so many are able to make it to Earth, if they manage to get away from Luna in the first place.
That's terrifying, said Iko, who had acknowledged the truth of Cinder's race much as she'd acknowledged Thorne's convict status, with loyalty and acceptance, but without changing her opinion that Lunars and convicts remained untrustworthy and unredeemable as a general rule. Cinder had not yet figured out how to tell her that she also happened to be the missing Princess Selene.
I know it is, said Cinder, but it would be awfully convenient if I knew how they did it.
Do you think it's with their, Thorne rolled his wrist toward her, crazy lunar magic stuff?
Bioelectricity, she said, quoting Dr. Erland. Calling it magic only empowers them.
Whatever.
I don't know. It could be some special technology they install on their ships.
Optimistically hoping it's magic, maybe you should start practicing?
Cinder bit the inside of her cheek.
Start practicing what?
I guess I can try.
Turning her attention back to the crate, she pulled up the lid and was met with the box of packing chips. She stuffed her metal hand into it and emerged with a skinny wooden doll bedecked in feathers and painted with six eyes.
What is this?
Venezuelan dream doll?
It's hideous.
It's worth about 10,000 univs.
Heart skipping, Cinder lowered the doll back into the protective packaging.
You don't think you might have something useful in all of these?
Like, I don't know, a fully charged power cell?
Doubtful, said Thorne. How much longer will ours hold out?
Iko chimed.
Approximately 37 hours.
Thorne gave Cinder a thumbs up.
Plenty of time to learn a new lunar trick, right?
Cinder shut the crate's lid and slid it back against the others, trying not to show panic at having to use her new gift for anything, much less something as huge as disguising a cargo ship.
In the meantime, I'll do a little research. Try to determine the best place for us to land.
Not the Commonwealth, obviously. I hear Fiji's nice this time of year.
Or Los Angeles, Iko practically sang. They have a huge escort droid outlet store there. I wouldn't mind having an escort droid body. Some of the newer models come with color-changing fiber-optic hair.
Cinder slumped onto the floor again and scratched at her wrist, a tick that was becoming awkward now that she had no gloves to fiddle with.
We're not landing a stolen American ship in the American Republic, she said, fixing her attention on the net screen, where her own prison picture hovered in the corner. She was so sick of that picture.
Do you have any suggestions? Said Thorne.
Africa.
She heard herself saying it, but nothing came out.
That's where she was supposed to go, to meet Dr. Erland, so that he could tell her what to do next. He had plans for her. Plans to make her a hero, a savior, a princess. Plans to overthrow Levana and instate Cinder as the true queen. Her right hand started to shake.
Dr. Erland had set up the cyborg draft and treated dozens, perhaps hundreds of cyborgs like throwaways, all for the sake of finding her. And then, when he found her, he kept the secret of her identity until he had no other choice but to tell her, all the while planning out the rest of her life. He had made his need for revenge the highest priority. But what the doctor hadn't considered was that Cinder had no desire to be queen. She didn't want to be a princess or an heir to anything. All her life, at least all the life she could remember, all she'd ever wanted was freedom.
And now, for the first time, she had it, however tenuous it was. There was no one telling her what to do, no one to judge or criticize. But if she went to Dr. Erland, she would lose all that. He would expect her to reclaim her rightful place as the Queen of Luna, and that struck her as the most binding shackles of all. Cinder gripped her shaking hand with the steady cyborg one. She was tired of everyone deciding her life for her. She was ready to figure out who she really was, not what anyone else told her to be.
Cinder?
Europe. She pressed her back into the crate, forcing herself to sit straight, to feign certainty. We're going to Europe. A brief silence.
Any reason in particular?
She met his gaze and pondered a long moment before choosing her words. Do you believe in the lunar air? Thorn propped his chin on both palms.
Of course.
No, I mean, do you believe she's still alive? He peered at her as if she were being cute.
Because it was so vague the first time? Yes, of course, I think she's alive.
Cinder drew back. You do?
Sure. I know some people think it's all conspiracy theories, but I've heard that Queen Levana was really paranoid for months after that fire, when she should have been ecstatic because she was finally queen, right?
It's like she knew the princess had gotten away.
Yeah, but those could only be stories, Cinder said, not knowing why she was trying to dissuade him. Perhaps because she'd never believed any of it until she'd known the truth.
He shrugged.
What does this have to do with Europe?
Cinder shifted to face him more fully, crisscrossing her legs. There's a woman who lives there, or at least she used to live there. She used to be in their military. Her name is Michelle Benoit, and I think she might be connected to the missing princess. She took in a slow breath, hoping she hadn't said anything that could give her secret away.
Where did you hear this?
An android told me. A royal android.
Oh, Kai's android?
Aiko said, excitedly changing the screen to one of Kai's fan pages. Cinder sighed. Yes, His Majesty's android. Unbeknownst to her at the time, her cyborg brain had recorded every word that the android, Nancy, had spoken, as if it had known that Cinder would someday need to draw on this information again. According to Nancy's research, a lunar doctor named Logan Tanner had brought Cinder to Earth when she was still a child, after Levana's murder attempt had failed. He'd eventually been incarcerated in a psychiatric hospital and committed suicide, but not before passing her off to someone else. Nancy had thought that someone else was an ex-military pilot from the European Federation. Wing Commander Michelle Benoit.
A royal android, Thorne said, showing the first sign of speculation. And how did it get this information?
That I have no idea. But I want to find this Michelle Benoit and see if it was right. And hope that Michelle Benoit had some answers that Dr. Erlon didn't. Perhaps she could tell Cinder about her history, about those 11 long years lost to her memory, about her surgery and the surgeons and Lynn Garen's invention that had kept Cinder from using her lunar gift until Dr. Erlon had disabled it. Perhaps she had her own ideas about what Cinder should do next. Ideas that left her some choices for the rest of her life.
I'm in.
She started.
You are?
Sure, this is the biggest unsolved mystery of the Third Era. There's got to be someone out there offering a reward for finding this princess, right?
Yeah, Queen Levana.
Thorne tilted toward her, nudging her with his elbow.
In that case, we already have something in common with the princess, don't we?
He winked, setting Cinder's nerve on edge.
I just hope she's cute.
Could you at least try to focus on the important things?
That would be important.
Thorne pulled himself up with a groan, still sore from all the rearranging.
Hungry? I think there's a can of beans in there calling my name.
No, I'm fine, thank you. When he had gone, Cinder hefted herself up onto the nearest crate and rolled out her shoulders. The news was still broadcasting on the screen, muted. A ticker read, hunt continues for lunar fugitive Lynn Cinder and crown traitor Dimitri Erland. Her throat constricted. Crown traitor? She shouldn't have been surprised. How long had she expected it to take them to figure out who had helped her escape? Cinder sank onto her back, feet dangling off the crate, and stared at the maze of pipes and bundled wires that cluttered the ship's rafters. Was she making a mistake by going to Europe? It was a draw she didn't think she could resist, not only because of what Nancy had said, but because of Cinder's own jumbled memories, too. She'd always known that she'd been adopted in Europe, and she had the faintest recollection of it, only drug-muddled memories that she'd always thought might be part dream. A barn, a snow-covered field, a gray sky that never ended, and then a long, long train ride bringing her to New Beijing and her new family. She felt compelled to go there now, to figure out where she had been during all those lost years and who had taken care of her, who else knew her biggest secret. But what if she was only avoiding the inevitable? What if this was just a distraction to keep her from going to Dr. Erland and accepting her fate? At least the doctor could teach her how to be a lunar, how to protect herself from Queen Levana. She didn't even know how to use her glamour. Not properly, anyway. Pursing her lip, she held her cyborg hand up over her face. Its metal plating shone almost mirror-like beneath the ship's dim lights. It was so pristine, so well-crafted. It did not seem like her hand. Not yet. Tilting her head, Cinder held up her other human hand beside it and tried to imagine what it would be like to be fully human. Two limbs made of skin and tissue and bones. Blood pumping in faintly blue veins beneath the surface. All 10 fingernails. An electric current traipsed down her nerves, and her cyborg hand began to morph in her vision. Little wrinkles appeared in her knuckles. Tendons stretched beneath her skin. The edges softened, warmed, turned to flesh. She was looking at two hands, two human hands, small and dainty with perfectly sculpted fingers and delicate rounded nails. She flexed the fingers of her left hand, forming a fist, then stretched them out again. An almost giddy laugh fell out of her. She was doing it. She was using her glamour. She did not need gloves anymore. She could convince everyone that this was real. No one would ever know she was cyborg again. The realization was stark and sudden and overwhelming. And then, too soon, an orange light flickered in the corner of her vision, her brain warning her that what she was seeing was a lie, that this was not real, would never be real. She sat up with a gasp and squeezed her eyes shut before her retina scanner could start to pick up on all the little inaccuracies and falsehoods like it had done with Levana's glamour when Cinder had begun to see through it. She was annoyed with herself, disgusted at how easily the desire had come to her. This was how Levana did it. She kept a hold on her people by tricking both their eyes and their hearts. She ruled with fear, yes, but also with adoration. It would be easy to abuse a person when they never recognized it as abuse. It was not so different from when she glamoured Thorn. She'd owned his mind without even trying to, and he'd jumped at the chance to do her bidding. She sat shivering for a while, listening to Thorn banging around in the galley and humming to himself. If this was her chance to decide who she was, who she wanted to be, then the first decision was an easy one. She would never be like Queen Levana. Chapter 20. The Trax magnets had gone silent, replaced with the sounds of their own footsteps in the brush and the caws of migrating birds. Only a suggestion of sun filtered down through the thick tree cover, and the forest smelled of tree sap and the coming of autumn. Time seemed to stretch on for eons, although Scarlet's port screen indicated that not even an hour had passed when they came across the stopped train. Scarlet first noticed sounds that didn't belong to the forest. the crunching of treads on dirt and gravel as dozens of androids circled the perimeter. Wolf abandoned the tracks, pushing through the brush and leading them into the security of the woods. Scarlet tucked away the port so she could use both hands to climb fallen logs and keep twigs and spider webs out of her hair. After a while, she tugged her hood over her head, lessening her vision but feeling better protected from the things that reached and jabbed at her. They climbed up an embankment, using the roots of a pine tree that looked about to topple over onto the tracks. On higher ground, Scarlet could see the dappled glint of sunlight off the train's metal roof. The occasional passenger cast a shadow against the windows. Scarlet could not imagine being among them. Surely everybody knew what the medical emergency was by now. How long would it take to test every passenger for the plague and determine who could be let go? How long could they keep healthy people quarantined? Or would they let them go at all? To prevent escapees, a small army of androids patrolled around the train, their yellow sensors shuffling over the windows and doors, occasionally darting toward the forest. Though Scarlet didn't think they could see her so high above the tracks, she nevertheless crept back from the embankment and slowly, slowly unzipped her hoodie. Wolf glanced back just as she was pulling her arms from the sleeves, glad she was wearing a much more camouflage-worthy black tank top underneath. She cinched the hoodie tight around her waist. "Better?" she mouthed, but Wolf only glanced away.
"They'll have noticed we're missing," he whispered.
The nearest android spun toward them, and Scarlet ducked, worried that even her hair could draw attention. When the android rolled away again, Wolf slinked forward, holding back a tree branch for Scarlet to pass beneath. They moved at a tractor's pace, crouched low to keep out of sight. It seemed every step Scarlet took sent another creature scurrying away for cover. A squirrel, a tiny swallow, and she feared that the androids would be able to track them by the disturbed wildlife alone. But no warning alarm came from the tracks. They stopped only once, when a streak of blue light danced on the trunks over their heads. Scarlet followed Wolf's lead and pressed herself nearly to the ground, listening to the pounding of her heart, the rush of adrenaline in her ears. With a start, she felt Wolf's warm fingers pressing into her back. They were steady against her, calming, as she watched the android's light scan back and forth, darting into the forest canopy. She risked the slightest tilt of her head until she could see Wolf beside her, immobile, every muscle taut, except the fingers of his other hand, which were tapping, tapping, tapping against a large rock, expelling the nervous energy that had nowhere else to go. She watched the fingers, half mesmerized, and didn't realize that the light had flickered away until the pressure of Wolf's touch lifted from her back. They prowled on. Soon the train was behind them, the noise of lost civilization fading in the chatter of crickets and toads. When Wolf seemed satisfied they weren't being followed, he led them out of the forest and back down to the tracks. Despite the growing distance between them and the train, neither spoke. Just as the sun was kissing the horizon, almost blindingly bright in those rare moments when it could be glimpsed through the trees, Wolf stopped and turned back. Scarlet halted a few steps ahead of him and followed his gaze, but she saw nothing but overgrown sticker bushes and long shadows that had no end. Her ears were perked, listening for another howl, but she couldn't pick up anything but bird chatter and, overhead, the squeaks of a colony of bats. "More wolves?" she finally asked. A long silence, followed by a terse nod. "More wolves." It wasn't until he started walking again that Scarlet released a captured breath. They'd been walking for hours without sign of another train, a cross-section of tracks, or civilization. On one hand, it was beautiful here. The fresh air, the wildflowers, the critters that came to the edge of the brush to watch Scarlet and Wolf before scurrying back into the ferns. But on the other hand, her feet and back were sore. Her stomach was growling,
And now Wolf was telling her that the less lovable creatures of the forest were prowling nearby. A chill rushed up her arms. Untying her hoodie from her waist, she tugged it on and yanked the zipper up to her neck. Pulling out her port screen, she deflated to see that they'd gone a mere 18 miles, that they had another 30 to go before they reached the nearest station.
"There's a junction coming up in about a half mile."
"Good," said Wolf. "Whatever trains were scheduled to come through on these tracks won't be making it through anytime soon. We should start seeing some trains after the junction."
"And when this train comes," she said, "how do you plan on getting us onto it?"
"Same way we got off the last one." He sent a sly grin toward her. "Like jumping off a barn, was it?"
She glared.
"The comparison doesn't work as well for jumping back onto a train."
His response was that same teasing smile, and Scarlet turned away, thinking that maybe she didn't want to know what his plan was, so long as he had one. A late flowering shrub trembled just off the path, and Scarlet's heart thumped, until a harmless pine marten crawled out and disappeared into the trees. She sighed, annoyed at her restlessness.
"So," she said, disrupting Wolf in another backward glance, "who would win in a fight, you or a pack of wolves?"
He frowned at her, all seriousness.
"Depends," he said, slowly, like he was trying to figure out her motive for asking. "How big is the pack?"
"I don't know, what's normal, 6?
"I could win against 6, he said. "Any more than that, and it could be a close call."
Scarlet smirked.
"You're not in danger of low self-esteem, at least."
"What do you mean?"
"Nothing at all." She kicked a stone from their path. "How about you and a lion?"
"A cat? Don't insult me."
She laughed, the sound sharp and surprising.
"How about a bear?"
"Why, do you see one out there?"
"Not yet, but I want to be prepared in case I have to rescue you."
The smile she'd been waiting for warmed his face, a glint of white teeth flashing.
"I'm not sure. I've never had to fight a bear before."
He cocked his head toward the east.
"There's a lake that way, maybe 100 yards. We should refill the water."
"Wait."
Wolf paused, glanced at her. Scarlet's brow was creased as she inched toward him.
"Do that again."
He took half a step back, eyes glinting with sudden nerves.
"Do what?"
"Smile."
The order was met with the opposite response. Wolf shrank back, his jaw tense, as if to be sure his lips stayed locked together. Scarlet hesitated only a moment before reaching for him. He winced, but didn't move as she cupped his chin and gently pulled open his lips with her thumb. He took in a hissing breath before touching his tongue to the point of his right tooth. But they were not normal. They were almost fang-like, with sharp, elongated canines. She realized, too slowly, they were like wolf teeth. Wolf turned his face away, locking his jaw again. His whole body stayed tense, uncomfortable. She saw him gulp.
"Implants?"
He scratched the back of his neck, unable to look at her.
"That order of the pack sure takes this wolf thing seriously, don't they?"
Finding her hand still hovering in midair, her fingers dangerously close to tilting Wolf's face back toward her, she let it fall and tucked it into her front pocket. Her heart was suddenly racing.
"So are there any other oddities I should know about? A tail, perhaps?"
Finally, he met her gaze, flushed with insult until he found her smiling up at him.
"I'm joking," she said, offering an apologetic grin. "They're only teeth. At least they're not implanted on your scalp like that guy at the fights had."
It took a moment, but soon his embarrassment started to melt, his scowl softening around the edges. His lips turned up again. But it was not another true smile. She nudged his foot with her toes.
"All right, I'll accept that smile for now. You said you had a river nearby?"
Seemingly grateful to be released from the conversation,
Wolf ducked back from her.
A lake, he said. I can smell it.
Scarlet squinted in the direction he'd gestured, seeing nothing but more trees, the same old trees.
Of course you can,
she said, following as he pushed into the undergrowth. And he was right, though it was more a pond than a lake, kept fresh by a creek that flowed in and out on the far side. The shore changed from grass to rocks before disappearing beneath the surface, and a cluster of beech trees hung their branches toward the water. Rolling up her sleeves, Scarlet splashed some water on her face and slurped up big handfuls. She hadn't realized how thirsty she was until she'd found that she couldn't stop drinking it. Wolf busied himself dunking his hands and wetting his wet fingers through his hair, making it stand in each direction as if it had gotten too tame during their trek. Refreshed, Scarlet sat back on her heels and glanced across at Wolf.
I don't believe it.
He met her gaze.
Your hands aren't twitching,
she said, gesturing at the palm set loosely on his knee. It instantly flexed into a fist, his fingers uncomfortable beneath her scrutiny.
Maybe the forest is having a good effect on you.
Wolf seemed to consider this, his brow drawn as he topped off the water bottle and nestled it into the bag.
Maybe so,
he said. Then,
is there any more food?
No, I didn't realize we'd be living off our own reserves. Scarlet laughed.
Now that you mention it, here I am thinking the fresh air must be working a miracle when you're probably just suffering from low blood sugar. Come on, maybe we'll come across some wild berries or something.
She moved to stand when she heard quacking on the other side of the lake. Half a dozen ducks were making their way into the water, paddling out and dipping their heads beneath the surface. Scarlet bit her lip.
Or do you think you could catch one of those?
As he shifted his attention to the ducks, a daring grin spread over his face. He made it look easy, prowling up to the unsuspecting birds like a born predator. But if Scarlet was impressed, and perhaps she was, it was nothing compared to his awe as he watched her defeather the dead fowl like a trained expert, pricking holes in its skin to allow for the outer layer of fat to drain out while it cooked. The trickiest part was lighting a fire, but with a quick search on her port screen and a clever use of the gunpowder in one of her gun's cartridges, Scarlet was soon mesmerized by the gray plumes of a small fire winding their way toward the forest canopy. Wolf's attention was off in the woods as he stretched his long legs in front of him.
How long have you lived on the farm? He asked, digging his heel into the dirt.
Scarlet settled her elbows over her knees and stared impatiently at the duck.
Since I was 7.
Why did you leave Paris? She peered up at him, but his attention was caught on the tranquil water.
I was miserable there.
After my mom left, my dad preferred to spend his time at the bar instead of with me. So I came to live with grand-mère.
And were you happier there?
She shrugged.
It took some getting used to. I went from being a pretty spoiled city kid to getting up at dawn and being expected to finish my chores. I had my share of rebellions, but it wasn't the same. When I lived with my dad, I used to throw fits and tantrums, break things and make up stories and anything I could just to get his attention, to get him to care. But I never did any of that with grand-mère. We would sit in the garden on warm nights and just talk, and she would actually listen to what I said. She treated my opinions like they were valid, like I had something worthwhile to say.
Her eyes fogged as she stared into the ashes beneath the flames.
Half the time, we'd end up fighting with each other, because we both have such big opinions and are too stubborn to ever admit we're wrong about something. But there would always reach this point, every single time, when one of us would be yelling or just about ready to stomp away and slam the door, and then my grandma would just start laughing. And then, of course, I would start laughing, and she'd say that I was just like her. she gulped, tightening her arms around her knees. She'd say that I was bound to have a tough life because I was just like her.
Scarlet rubbed her palms against her lashes, smearing away the tears before they could fall. Wolf waited for her breaths to steady before asking,
"Was it always just the two of you?"
She nodded, and when she was sure she'd stifled the tears, peeled her hands away. She sniffed and reached forward to flip the wings, their skin already blackened.
"Yep, just the two of us. Grandmère never married. Whoever my grandpa was, he's been out of the picture for a long time. She never really talked about it."
"And you didn't have any siblings, or adopted siblings? Wards?"
"Wards?" Scarlet swiped her sleeve across her nose and squinted at him.
"No, it was just me."
She added a branch to the fire.
"How about you? Any siblings?"
Wolf curled his fingers into the rocks.
"One, a younger brother."
Scarlet barely heard him over the crackle of the flames. She felt the weight of those three words, "a younger brother." Wolf's expression showed neither affection nor coldness. He struck her as someone who would be protective of a younger sibling, but his face seemed hardened against that instinct.
"Where is he now?" she asked. "Does he still live with your parents?"
Leaning forward, Wolf adjusted the nearest duck leg.
"No, neither of us have spoken to our parents in a very long time."
Scarlet refocused on the cooking bird.
"Not getting along with your parents. I guess that's something we have in common, then."
Wolf's grip locked around the drumstick, and only when a spark lanced out at him from the fire did he retract his arm.
"I loved my parents,"
he said with the tenderness that had been missing when he mentioned his brother.
"Oh," she said dumbly. "Are they dead?"
She flinched at her crudeness, wishing just once she knew when to hold her tongue. But Wolf seemed more resigned than hurt as he picked through the rocks beside him.
"I don't know. There are rules that come with being a member of the pack. One is that you cut all ties with people from your past, including your family. Especially your family."
She shook her head, baffled. "But if you had a good home life, why did you even join them in the first place?"
"I wasn't given a choice," he scratched behind his ear. "My brother wasn't given one either when they came for him, a few years after they took me. But that never seemed to bother him like it bothered me."
He trailed off, tossing a stone into the water.
"It's complicated, and it doesn't matter anymore."
She frowned. It was unfathomable to her that you wouldn't have a choice to live that lifestyle. To leave your home and family. To join a violent gang. But before she could press him further, Wolf's attention swiveled back toward the train tracks, and he leapt to his feet. Scarlet turned, her heart landing in her throat. The man from the dining car crept out of the shadows, quiet as a cat. He was still smiling, but it was nothing like that teasing, flirtatious grin she'd seen on him before. It took her a slow, blank moment to recall his name. Ran. Tipping his head back, Ran sniffed longingly at the air.
"Lovely," he said. "It seems I'm just in time for supper."
Chapter 21.
"I'm so sorry if I've interrupted you," Ran said, lingering beneath the forest canopy. "The scent was simply too enticing to pass up."
His eyes were on Wolf as he said this, and the twinkle behind them made Scarlet's toes curl in her shoes. Grasping the handle of her pistol, she dragged it in toward her hip.
"Of course," Wolf said after a long silence, his voice dark with warning. "We have plenty."
"Thank you, friend."
The man walked around the fire, passing by so close to Scarlet that she had to shrink away to keep her elbow from brushing his leg. The hairs stood up on her forearms. Ran sprawled out opposite the fire from her, lounging as if the shore were his own private beach. After a moment, Wolf settled down between them, not lounging.
"Wolf, this is Ran," said Scarlet, flushing from the awkwardness. "I met him on the train."
Wishing she could restructure her emotions into nonchalance, she busied her hands with turning the duck pieces. Wolf inched closer to her, keeping himself as a block between her and Ran, even though his face was tinged red from being so close to the flames.
"We had a lovely conversation in the dining car," said Ran. "About, what was it, righteous lupine wannabes?"
Scarlet glared at him.
"A topic that never ceases to fascinate me," she said, tone even as she pulled the duck wings and legs out of the pit. "These are done."
She took a drumstick for herself and handed the other to Wolf. Ran didn't complain about the two bony wings, and Scarlet grimaced when he pulled the first apart, cartilage popping loudly at the joints.
"Bon appétit,"
said Ran, picking at the meat with his eerily sharp nails, juices dripping down his arms. Scarlet nibbled at the meat, while her two companions attacked their shares like animals, each keeping a wary eye on the other. She leaned forward.
"So, Ran, how did you get away from the train?"
Ran tossed the clean bones of one wing into the lake.
"I might ask you the same."
She pretended that her heart wasn't pulsating erratically.
"We jumped."
"Risky," said Ran with a smirk. Wolf bristled. The relaxation that had graced his features before was gone, replaced by the simmering temper Scarlet had seen at the street fight. The tapping fingers, the jostling foot.
"We're still a long way from Paris," said Ran, ignoring Scarlet's question. "How unfortunate this turn of events has been. For the plague victim, of course."
Scarlet adjusted the breast meat.
"It's awful. I'm grateful that Wolf was with me, or I'd probably still be stuck there."
"Wolf," said Ran, enunciating it very carefully.
"What an unusual name. Did your parents give it to you?"
"Does it matter?"
said Wolf, tossing away his bone.
"I'm only making conversation."
"I'd prefer silence," Wolf said, a growl in his tone.
After a moment in which the distrust was palpable between them, Ran faked a gasp.
"I'm so sorry," he said, picking the last bit of meat from the bones. "Have I stumbled upon a honeymoon? What a lucky man you are."
His face taunted as he pushed the shredded meat into his mouth. Wolf curled his fingers into the sand. Squinting at the man through the haze of smoke and heat, Scarlet leaned forward.
"Is it my imagination, or do you two know each other?"
Neither denied it. Wolf's focus was pinned to Ran, a twitch away from attacking him. Suspicion sliced through Scarlet's thoughts, and she gripped the gun.
"Roll up your sleeve."
"I beg your pardon,"
said Ran, licking the juices as they dripped down his wrist. Clambering to her feet, she leveled the barrel at him.
"Now."
He hesitated only a moment, expression unreadable. He reached for his left wrist and rolled the sleeve past his elbow. LSOP 1126 was tattooed across the muscle of his forearm. Anger boiled up inside Scarlet, every bit as hot as the coals beneath the fire.
"Why didn't you tell me he was one of them?"
she hissed without taking her focus or the gun off the tattoo. For the first time, Ran's composure stiffened.
"I was hoping to determine why he's here and why he'd approach you on the train without alarming you," said Wolf. "Scarlet, this is Ran Kesley, a loyal soldier to the Order of the Pack. Don't worry, he's only an Omega."
Ran's nose wrinkled at what Scarlet could tell had been a low insult. She swapped her attention between the two.
"You could smell him on me," she said. "When I came back to the car, you knew. And you knew he was following us all this time. How?"
She gaped at Wolf,
the unnatural eyes, the uncanny senses, the teeth, the howls, the idea that he'd never had a tomato before.
"Who are you people?"
Hurt flinched across Wolf's face, but it was Ran who spoke.
"What exactly have you told her, brother?"
Wolf stood, forcing Ran to tilt back his head to hold his stare.
"She knows I'm no longer a brother to you," he said, "and she knows that no one with that mark can be trusted."
Ran smiled at the irony.
"Is that all?"
"I know you have my grandmother!" she yelled,
startling a flock of swallows out of the nearest tree. Once their flapping had gone quiet, the woods settled into a thick hush, Scarlet's words still ringing. Her hand started to shake, and she forced it to be still, though Ran continued to sit sprawled and at ease on the shore.
"You have my grandmother," she said, more slowly this time. "Don't you?"
"Well, not with me."
White sparks flashed across Scarlet's vision, and it took all her willpower not to pull the trigger and erase his smugness.
"Why are you following us?"
she said when the throbbing rage had become a manageable simmer. She could see him calculating his response, planting his palm on the rocky shore. Ran pushed himself to standing and brushed the dirt from his hands.
"I've been sent to retrieve my brother," he said, as casually as if he'd been sent to the shore for milk and bread.
"Perhaps he did not tell you that he and I are part of an elite pack given a special assignment. That assignment has been canceled, and Master J.L. wants us to return. All of us." Scarlet's stomach tightened at Rand's meaningful look, but Wolf's expression was filled with more distrust and shadows than it had ever been.
"I'm not coming back," he said. "J.L. no longer controls me."
Rand sniffed.
"I doubt that. And you know as well as anyone that we don't allow our brothers to leave us." He rolled his sleeves down over the tattoo. "Though I confess, I haven't missed having one less alpha around."
The wind shifted, sending sparks from the fire into Scarlet's face, and she stumbled back, blinking them away.
"Did you really think it wise to come here without JL to protect you?" said Wolf.
"I don't need JL's protection."
"That would be a first."
With a snarl, Ran leapt forward, but Wolf danced out of his reach and retaliated with a fist aimed at Ran's jaw. Ran blocked, grasping Wolf's fist and using the momentum to spin Wolf around and lock his elbow around Wolf's neck. Wolf reached back, grasped Ran's shoulder, and flipped Ran over his head. Ran landed with a solid grunt, his feet smacking the water. He was up again in a blink. Scarlet's hand trembled, the gun dancing between the two, her pulse galloping. Ran was shaking with smothered rage, while Wolf was carved from rock, shrewd and calculating.
"I really do think it's time for you to return, brother," Ran said through clenched teeth.
Wolf shook his head, damp spikes of hair flopping onto his forehead.
"You never were a match for me.
I think you'll find me somewhat improved, Alpha."
Wolf snorted, and Scarlet sensed he didn't believe Ran could ever be a genuine opponent.
"Is that why you followed us? You saw your chance to improve your rank? To defeat me away from the pack?"
"I told you why I'm here. JL sent for you. The assignment is canceled. When he finds out about this rebellion of yours..."
Wolf launched at Ran, knocking him onto his back. Ran's head landed in the water, and Scarlet heard a sickening crunch as it collided with the hard stones beneath the surface. She screamed and ran toward them, digging her nails into Wolf's arm.
"No, stop! He might be able to tell us something!"
Wolf's sharp canines were bared as he pulled a fist back and landed a punch to Ran's face.
"Wolf, stop it! My grandmother, he knows about... Wolf, let him go!"
When he didn't relent, Scarlet fired a warning shot into the air. The echo filled the clearing, but Wolf was unfazed. Ran's arms stopped flailing, slipped weakly down Wolf's forearms, and dropped into the water.
You're going to kill him, she shrieked. Wolf! Wolf!
As a last burst of bubbles rose up from Rand's mouth, Scarlet stepped back, let out a breath, and pulled the trigger again. Wolf hissed and fell onto his side. He clasped his hand over his left arm, where blood was already seeping into the cloth of his sleeve. But it wasn't a deep wound. The bullet had barely grazed him. He blinked up at Scarlet.
Did you just shoot me?
You didn't leave me much choice. With ringing ears, Scarlet fell to her knees and heaved Ran up by his shoulders, laying him back down at an awkward angle on the shore. He rolled onto his side, left eye already swelling shut, and watered down blood dripping down his nose and jaw. With a rattling cough, more blood and water spilled out of his mouth, puddling onto the sand. Releasing a strangled breath, Scarlet glanced back up at Wolf. He hadn't moved, but his expression had shed the maniacal anger for something akin to admiration.
When you greeted me with a gun on your doorstep, he said, it's nice to know you meant it.
Scarlet scowled at him.
Honestly, Wolf, what are you thinking? He could tell us something. He could help get my grandma back.
His half-smile softened, and for a moment he looked sorry. For her.
He won't talk.
How do you know?
I know.
That's not a good enough answer.
Watch your gun.
What?
She dropped her gaze to the shore beside her, just in time to see Ran wrap his fingers around the gun's handle. She grasped the barrel and snatched it away from him. An exhausted chuckle brought more bloodied spittle to Ran's lips.
I will kill you one day, brother, if Jael doesn't first. Stop provoking him!
Scarlet yelled, climbing to her feet. Out of Ran's reach, she reset the safety and shoved the gun back into the waist of her jeans.
You're not exactly in any position to be making threats right now, anyway.
Ran said nothing. His eyes had closed, his lips left hanging open with a smear of blood on his cheek, taking in slow, rattling breaths. Disgusted, she turned back to Wolf, watching as he peeled his hand away from his wound and stared with surprise at the blood coating his palm. He leaned over his elbow and swished his hand around in the water to get the stain off. With a sigh, she scrambled to her forgotten bag and pulled out a small first aid kit. Wolf didn't argue as she ripped open the tear in his sleeve caused by the bullet and took over the job of washing and bandaging the wound. The bullet had just grazed his bicep.
I'm sorry I shot you, she said, but you are going to kill him.
I still might, Wolf said, watching her hands.
She shook her head, taping off the bandage.
He's not your real brother, is he? That's just a gang thing, isn't it?
Wolf grunted, said nothing.
Wolf?
I never said we got along.
Scarlet peered up at the wild contempt filling Wolf's face. His green eyes were burning, staring at Rand's prone body behind her.
Good.
The ferocity in her voice startled away some of his hatred, and Wolf turned his attention back to her.
You must know his weaknesses. You'll know how best to question him.
That sympathetic look again.
We're trained to withstand questioning. He won't help us.
But he already gave us some information.
Packing up the remains of the kit, she tossed it toward her bag. It missed the opening and slid down to the ground.
He obviously knew something when I asked about my grandma. And then this assignment that was canceled? What's that about? Does it have something to do with her?
Wolf shook his head, but she detected a clouding in his eyes.
He told us what he wanted us, me, to know, or to believe. I wouldn't put stock in any of it.
How can you be so sure?
His fingers started up again. Clench, release, clench.
I know Ran. He would do anything to improve his standing. By tracking me down and forcing me to return, or even showing proof that he'd fought me and won. He hoped to do just that. As for the assignment I'd been a part of when I left, they wouldn't cancel it. It was too important to them.
What about my grandmother?
He shook off a troubled frown.
Right, we should keep moving.
He tested the strength in his injured arm before using it to push himself to his feet. The fire had burned down to smoldering coals, and soon he had stamped them out, ignoring the duck breast that had shriveled up into a chunk of coal.
That's not what I meant, said Scarlet, staying put on the shore. Shouldn't we at least try to question him? Scarlet, listen to me. Does he know something that would help? Yes, probably, but he won't give it to us, unless you plan on torturing it out of him. And even then, there's nothing you could do that would frighten him more than what the pack will do if he talks. We already know where your grandmother is. Dealing with him is a waste of time.
What if we brought him with us and offered him as a trade? She suggested, watching as Wolf reloaded their bag. Wolf laughed.
A trade? For an Omega? He gestured at Ran. He's worth nothing.
Though his temper could be heard just beneath the surface, Scarlet was glad that the temporary insanity was gone from his eyes.
He'll go back to them, she said, and tell them you're with me.
Doesn't matter. Slinging the pack over his shoulder, Wolf spared a final, scornful look at his brother.
We'll get there before he does.
Chapter 22. Night crept up fast. The forest leaned in toward them, a solid wall of shadows beneath the dim spotlight of a waning moon. They'd passed only one junction and continued wordlessly north. Seeing another set of tracks combining with theirs had given Scarlet a beat of hope. At least now there was a chance of crossing paths with a new train. But the maglev tracks remained silent. Scarlet's port screen light was enough to see by for a time, but she worried about killing the battery and knew they should probably stop soon. Wolf was no longer looking back every few minutes, and Scarlet suspected he'd known they were being followed all along. Wolf stopped suddenly, and Scarlet's heart leapt. For a moment, sure he'd heard wolves again.
Here, this will work.
He peered upward at a log that had fallen across the embankments on either side of them, creating a bridge over the tracks.
What do you think?
Scarlet followed him through the waist-high brush.
I thought maybe you were kidding before. You really think you can jump onto a moving train from here?
He nodded.
Without breaking a leg?
Or anything else? He met her speculative look with a hint of arrogance.
She shrugged. Anything to be out of these woods.
The ledge was a few feet over her head, but she clambered up with little trouble, grasping onto roots and jutting rocks. She heard a hiss from below and turned to see a shot of pain cross Wolf's face as he hauled himself up after her. She held her breath, feeling guilty, as he dusted off his hands.
Let me see, she said, grasping Wolf's forearm and holding up her port screen to shine a light on the bandage.
No blood had leaked through yet.
I really am sorry about shooting you. Are you?
Her touch lingered as it reached the end of the bandage, checking that it was still securely tied.
What does that mean? I suspect you would shoot me all over again if you thought it would help your grandmother.
She blinked up at him, almost surprised to discover how close they were standing.
I would, she said, but that doesn't mean I wouldn't be sorry about it afterward.
I'm just glad you didn't take my advice and shoot me in the head, he said, his teeth showing in the port screen's brightness.
His fingers barely fluttered across her sweater's pocket, making her jump. Then his fingers were gone, and Wolf was squinting against the bright light of the port screen.
Sorry, Scarlet stammered, angling it toward the ground.
Wolf moved around her, pressing on the fallen log with his foot.
It appears trustworthy.
Scarlet discovered a strange irony in his choice of words.
Wolf, she said, testing the way her voice echoed in the forest's emptiness.
He stiffened, though he didn't turn around.
When you first told me about leaving the pack, I thought maybe it had been months, or even years, but
Rand made it sound like you just left.
One hand came up to ruffle his hair as he turned back toward her.
Wolf?
It's been 3 weeks, he whispered. Then,
less than 3 weeks.
She sucked in a breath, held it, released it all at once.
About the time my grandmother disappeared.
He ducked his head, unable to meet her gaze. Scarlet shivered.
You told me that you were a nobody, barely more than an errand boy, but Rand called you an alpha. Isn't that a pretty high rank?
She saw his chest rise with a slow, tense breath.
And now you tell me that you left them around the same time my grandmother was kidnapped?
He rubbed absently at the tattoo, still saying nothing. Scarlet waited, blood beginning to simmer, until he dared to look at her. The port screen cast a wash of bluish-white light at their feet, but it did little to illuminate him. In the dark, she could see only the vaguest outline of his cheekbones and jaw, his hair like a clump of pine needles sticking out from his scalp.
You told me that you had no idea why they would take my grandmother. But that was a lie, wasn't it?
Scarlet.
So what was true? Did you really leave them, or is this all some story to get me to...
Gasping, she stumbled back. Her thoughts turned, a cascade of doubts and questions rushing through them.
Am I the mission that Ran was talking about? The one that was supposedly canceled?
No.
And after my dad warned me about this, he said one of you would come for me, and there you were. And I even knew you were one of them. I knew I couldn't trust you, and still I let myself believe.
Scarlet, stop.
She wrapped her fist around her hood's cords, tightening them against her throat. Her heart was pulsating now, blood running hot beneath her skin. She heard Wolf inhale, saw his hands spread out in the beam of the port screen.
You're right. I lied to you about not knowing why they took your grandmother. But you aren't the mission that Ran was talking about.
She tilted the port upward, shining it into his face. Wolf flinched, but didn't look away.
But it has something to do with my grandmother.
It has everything to do with your grandmother.
She bit down hard on her lower lip, trying to still the tide of rage rising inside her.
I'm sorry. I knew that if I told you, you wouldn't trust me. I know I should have anyway, but I couldn't.
The hand holding her port began to shake.
Tell me everything.
There was a long pause. A sickeningly long pause.
You're going to despise me,
he murmured. His chest sank in, trying to make himself small again, like he had in the alleyway, in the headlights of her ship. Scarlet pressed her hands so hard onto her hips, her bones began to ache.
Ran and I both were in the pack sent to retrieve your grandmother.
Scarlet's stomach curdled. The pack sent to retrieve her.
I wasn't with them when she was taken, he added quickly. As soon as we arrived in Ryu, I saw my chance to escape. I knew I could disappear there without the grid of the city to find me. So I took it. That was the morning she was taken.
He crossed his arms, like he was protecting